Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, and I'm your host. My work is dedicated to empowering people to live according to their own values of compassion and wellness, and you can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com. Today's topic is stages 9 and 10 of the 10 stages of what happens when you stop eating animals. Stage 9 is advocacy, and stage 10 is adaptation. Today's podcast is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast, all of you who are supporting this podcast. For instance, Tim Anderson, who is our platinum supporter, as well as Jennifer and Ben Ellis, also platinum supporters. We have a new gold supporter, Mark Smith from Norway. I didn't see a letter from you, Mark, but we've already responded to you. Thank you so much for your support. And gold supporter, Julia Daniel, whose letter I'm going to read to you. She's also gold. And silver supporter, Jennifer Watkins, who upgraded to gold, super gold. Thank you so much, Jennifer. This lovely email is from Julia. Hello, Colleen. I'm writing to tell you that I'm finally able to become a monthly patron, and it feels so good. It's truly long overdue since I feel you have been my closest friend in the last 5 years. I don't know what I could possibly type that could fully convey my gratitude for your time and energy towards this pertinent work, but I hope my warmest and most sincere thank you will suffice. After being inspired by my incredible partner, Kevin, to begin my vegan journey about 5 years ago, my mother has also transitioned. I would love to dedicate my patronage to her. Her name is Paige Frances Truax. After moving to and living in Costa Rica for 2 years, she began her vegan journey in a place where there is very little vegan culture or convenience food. I could not be more proud and inspired by her bravery and creativity. She is truly rocking it. Thank you endlessly, Colleen. Much love, Julia Daniel. And again, her sponsorship, her patronage is in honor of her mother, Paige Frances Truax. And all the best to you, Paige. And Julia, all the best to you. And thank you so much for your support. And Mark and Jennifer and Jen and Ben and Tim, I'm so grateful to you for your support and everybody who's supporting at every level. And if you are listening and value this work, go to ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com/support, or you can go right to Patreon, patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau, to become a monthly patron. Did I say monthly? A monthly patron. Every penny goes to this work. Every penny, 100% of what you contribute. Well, actually, let me qualify. It's not 100%. It's not 100% because I wish I could say it's 100%, but there are expenses that go along with even processing your contribution. So even when you give me $100 or you support at $10 a month, I actually immediately have money taken from that to support Patreon and PayPal. So frankly, I wish it could be 100%. When you send a check, that's virtually 100%, but and some people do. But everything I get, 100% of what I get, what I actually net from that goes to this work. It goes to this podcast. It goes to the daily Periscope videos. It goes to the time it takes to create and send out and schedule and write the Daily Dose of Compassion emails. It goes to the YouTube videos that I make. You are my patrons. You are my supporters. I don't have an employer. I have you. And I don't get paid for any of that except for what you provide in support. And if you go check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau, you will see that we have a new goal for the support. And I'll talk about that as we get into the podcast a little bit. But I want to start this episode, and I want to remind you that I will be in Port Townsend speaking on March 13th, 2016. So if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, I hope you can come to the event and bring friends and family. And remember that I am organizing a special weekend in 2016 for all of you podcast listeners to participate in a weekend of gathering and eating and workshops and learning and talking and teaching, possibly visiting an animal sanctuary. I want to see how it looks to create a weekend that's full for you and really valuable But with the 10-year anniversary of this podcast coming up, I think it's only proper that we celebrate it together. So I'm not sure of the exact date. It's going to be sometime in April or May or June 2016. Someone was suggesting Memorial Day. So I'm going to look at that. And I want you to just plant that seed in your calendar and remember this potential event when you're thinking about travel coming up for 2016. It's a beautiful time to visit the San Francisco Bay Area, and we're going to make it very special. So I hope you're all doing well. I am excited to return to the 10 stages. In fact, we're going to finish off the 10 stages today. This is a series I started a couple years ago now called 10 Stages, What Happens When You Stop Eating Animals. And you can go back to the episode called From Consumption to Compassion, the 10 stages we go through when we stop eating animals. And then you can listen to all the stages 1 through 8, or you can just listen to this one and then be inspired to go listen to the first one. You can listen in any order you like. You can find one that you identify with and just start there. It doesn't matter how you listen to them. These stages are not linear. They're not mandatory. You may never go through any of these stages. You may find that you go through many of them very quickly. And that's the point. You may wind up stopping and getting stuck in one of the stages without realizing it. The point is, these stages are fluid and flexible and merely my observations based on the thousands of people I've heard from over the years, and of course, based on my own experience. To recap, stage 1 is validation and the voracious consumption of information. Stage 2 is guilt and remorse. Stage 3 is coming out. Stage 4 is evangelism, or vegangelism, as some people have called it. Stage 5 is grief, anger, and sorrow. Stage 6 is belonging and finding community. Stage 7 is communication and finding your voice. Stage 8 is expansion of awareness and skills. And stage 9 is advocacy. Stage 10 is integration and adaptation. And we're going to cover stage 9 and 10 in today's episode. So we're going to wrap up these stages. I decided to combine these not only because the end of 2015 seemed like a fitting time to wrap up these 10 stages, but also because 9 and 10 flow together so well. And I knew one episode would be sufficient for both of them together. So stage 9, having experienced all of the benefits to leaving animals and animal secretions off of our plates and out of our bodies, and having found our own voice, and I encourage you to go back and listen to stage 7, which is about finding our own voice. In this stage, in stage 9, we begin to ask ourselves, where do I fit in? Where do I fit into this whole thing? How can I help? What skills do I have that I can use to be part of the solution? What's my contribution? So that's what I want to talk about first. I probably hear this question from folks a few times a week, and although I have definitely talked about this in various forms, in various mediums, in various podcast episodes, I think it's good to have an episode dedicated to advocacy. I don't think this is just about what you should do for a living. I think it's about finding your place, finding your voice, and that may look different than A, what you expected, and B, what other people expect when we're talking about advocacy. Of course, I think it's essential that you find your voice, and I really encourage you to go back and listen to stage 7 in every episode I talk about where I'm talking about communication and language. But it's also a matter of finding what type of advocacy you can get involved in, and there are many options. But I want to emphasize the fact that there may not be one answer for you, and that answer may also change, right? I think we have to be open to the fact that we might change our minds, or we might get burned out on one particular type of advocacy, or we might find that we have a new talent that we want to use, or we may get tired of doing something we had been doing for a while. Or we may find something we're better at, or we may go down one road and spend time there until we realize it's better to go down another road. That's all fine. This is not written in stone. Now, before I talk about specific forms of advocacy, I want to make it clear that you don't have to formally call yourself an advocate to be an effective voice for veganism or compassion or animals. You don't have to work full-time on behalf of animals or quit your job and work for an animal or vegan organization. Finding your place for animals or veganism or compassion, nonviolence might mean that you work at a job totally totally unrelated to animal advocacy and veganism, at which you're successful and make money and decide that you want to use that money to help support other people who have decided to do this work full time, which is what I know so many of you have done with my work. If you're vegan and you've come out of the vegan closet, was that stage four, and you're in a position to help others do the work that you're not interested in doing full time, but value, then there are so many options. Like I said, like you are an advocate at that point because you're at least just being in your vegan truth, right? You're standing in your vegan truth. You are the vegan in the room. But because being vegan is such a powerful means for preventing suffering, I do think it's so exciting that just by making different food choices, just by making different choices for our clothing and shoes, for our entertainment, for the cleaning and personal products we buy, we really can have a huge impact. So even if you don't have time or inclination to be an advocate in the formal sense, you are making a difference by choosing a compassionate lifestyle. This stuff is contagious and it's real and practical. But if you do want to find your place and you don't feel that being vegan is enough, a lot of people say, I'm vegan, I just don't feel like it's enough, I want to do more, then what is the best form of advocacy or activism for you? Now, my answer may not be your answer. Some people may say that the best type of advocacy is that which that person might think is the most effective. But even that's hard to say. There are people who think, you know, this kind of advocacy is the most effective. No, this kind of advocacy is the most effective. And some people have really worked it out like a math problem and said, this is the one we have to focus on because I think this is the most effective. I think that's really hard to do because I don't think it's a math problem. And I think honestly that being a good advocate means doing what you're good at, doing what you love, and doing what you see being the need that you can speak to, that you can fill, that you can answer. I happen to think that this is the key to not just advocacy, but the answer to what am I supposed to do in this world? And that means from a, you know, advocacy perspective, but also from a vocational perspective. And I think asking those questions, what do I love? What am I good at? And what need can I fill? I think those are really, really good questions to ask when you're trying to figure out the answers to those questions. What, who am I as an advocate and what is my vocation? If you want very specific things to do, I really encourage you to get the book Striking at the Roots by Mark Hawthorne, who's an amazing friend to the animals and is a very good friend of mine. The full title is Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. And it's the most comprehensive book ever written on the many ways you can act on behalf of animals, not just animals killed for human consumption, but animals exploited in every way in our society. And do follow Mark over at his social media channels. Again, it's Mark Hawthorne. I think certain types of advocacy are more effective than others. There are some that don't speak to me, but the bottom line is that you're going to be the most effective if you're really coming from a truthful and joyful place. I don't think we're supposed to be martyrs. I think we're supposed to be at our highest when we're speaking our truth. And if we're finding that we're using a method that doesn't really reflect our joy or our truth, then perhaps we need to find another method that works for us. The work I'm doing right now is very similar to the type of advocacy I did early on in a broad sense. Writing has always been something I have loved and had a knack for. So my early activism involved me making, I think I told you this in an early episode on the stages. I used to make little brochures and flyers about different issues on puppy mills and vivisection and vegetarianism, because at the time when I started doing that kind of advocacy, I wasn't vegan yet. I was just vegetarian. And this was also before the interwebs. So I would type in the names and addresses and telephone numbers of various organizations that people could get in touch with to learn more. I still have these early brochures and flyers. They were pretty cute. And I used to walk around the mall in New Jersey. If you want me to say it like that. I never talked like that, but I have friends and family who talk like that who live in New Jersey. So I used to walk around the mall in New Jersey and hand out these flyers, especially the ones related to puppy mills, because there was a pet store in the mall. And unfortunately, there probably is still a pet store in that mall. And I was scared to death doing this. I didn't know any other advocates. I didn't know any other activists. I just needed to do this work to inform people and feel like I was doing something. I bought the book. I mentioned that book. Now I'm looking on my shelves. Hold on. I'm looking at my shelves. Where is that book? It was a book on like ways, like the best ways to advocate for animals. I talked about it in the stage one episode because I wanted to know where I fit in. So we have all asked this question all of us have asked this question, what can I do? How can I do more? How can I fit in? And I just started doing whatever I could. I think it's natural for people to just jump into whatever they can or whatever comes to mind or whatever feels the most natural for them. Or really, it might be because we met someone who's doing something and we want to just do something so we get involved with them, whether it's tabling or leafleting or protesting. So I think that's very natural. And that can change as well. I didn't continue leafleting and tabling and doing street TV. This was all early parts of my activism because eventually I didn't feel it was the best use of my time. So just in short, I think I've talked about it on the episode about Nazi. There's an episode called like Nazism. Yeah, you'll have to go find it in my list on iTunes. But I think I tell you the story that I started. Well, so my advocacy started way back in New Jersey when I was walking around the mall and handing out flyers. But when I became vegan, everything got stepped up a notch. And I was doing street TV. So I was literally standing on the streets of Berkeley with a portable television and a stand and a battery and playing Meet Your Meat for passersby, and I was handing out Why Vegans. And it was really powerful and effective and moving and emotional and draining and holding that space. I think that's where I got really good at, well, I don't know. I mean, it's just something I've always enjoyed, is like kind of holding that space for people, even in a really difficult time. And it was, people would walk by and start crying, and people would walk by and say, oh my God, I had no idea. Give me a brochure. Tell me what to do. How can I become vegetarian? How can I become vegan? And some people would walk by and say obnoxious things, but you know, you just kind of know that's going to happen and you just move on, just keep moving on. You don't engage. And it was really scary, but it was really invigorating. And I loved doing it. And then I was part of the First Unitarian Church here in Oakland, and I started tabling. It was a captive audience for me because during coffee hour, different justice groups could table with different bits of information about different causes. And the Unitarian Church is a very progressive, very open-minded, very social justice-oriented church. And so it was very fitting for me. And I became very deeply involved in the justice area, well, the justice council, essentially, of that church, because animal advocacy is a justice issue. Animal rights is a justice issue. And so, long story short, I was tabling. I did a service on animals that was really exciting. I think that's when I realized I wanted to be a public speaker. It was really engaging and exciting for me. And organizing that whole service around animals and animal issues was very beautiful. I started teaching cooking classes because people were like, at the table, they'd be like, okay, I don't want to be part of this, but what do I eat? And so I started teaching cooking classes, and that led to my DVD, and that led to my podcast, that led to my books, and here I am today. So this kind of underlying desire to educate, raise awareness, provide information, provide resources, guide people, that's all been an undercurrent in my advocacy from the beginning. But, you know, there were things that I did that didn't work for me. There were a couple protests I went to that wasn't right, didn't feel right for me. Not to say that protests aren't right for you or that they're not effective. Whatever speaks to you, whatever you think you're good at, whatever you are finding is effective. I would find that when I was leafleting and tabling and doing street TV and doing the cooking classes and now doing the podcast and doing the speaking engagements and writing the books, like, I know it's effective because I can see the effects of it. And it felt really good to me, and it felt really invigorating to me. It didn't feel draining. If something just feels draining to you, that's a sign that it's not feeding you, but it's just draining you. Now, I want to say that I'm sure that there are forms of advocacy that people are involved in that feels draining. The question is, does it feel draining more of the time than not? Because people who do, look, I mean, my heroes are the people who do like the direct rescue of individual animals, right? Rescuing cats, dogs, farmed animals, wild rehabbers, whatever kind of rescue work is done, that's incredibly emotional and difficult and painful and physical. And, you know, you're going to feel burnt out. The question is, do you feel drained more of the time than fed? And if that's the answer, then you might need to switch something up. That doesn't mean it has to be permanent, because if there was a time that fed you, that just means you might need a break and then you can go back to it. But that's the point, is that you've got to feel fed by the advocacy that you're doing, and you want to feel that it's effective. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. But when it came to deciding how I wanted to be the most effective and how I could reach the most people, that's even why I stopped teaching the live cooking classes, because even though at one time it was really valuable for me to teach 30 people at a time. And at that time, it enabled me to have an income as well. In the very beginning, when I was building this career as doing this full time, meaning that I could sustain myself financially, that was really helpful at the time. But there came a time when it's not that the income wasn't helpful. It's just that the amount of time it took to do live cooking classes and then what I was getting the return for it. And the cooking classes were incredibly affordable. And yeah, I raised the prices over the years, but it was too much work for the return. And that didn't just mean income. That actually meant, look, I'm reaching 30 people. Like, that's great, but I could reach thousands or hundreds or thousands and or millions potentially by really focusing online. And so that's where I am today. Now I'll get back to that. So that's kind of how it all started for me. And I knew that when I left graduate school, I knew that I was going to do something like this. I went to school for English literature, both undergrad and graduate. And I knew, I went into graduate school thinking I was going to teach at university level. And I'm really grateful that I learned during graduate school that I didn't want to do that. I was teaching freshmen. And I realized it's not what I wanted to do for a living. I still wanted to be engaged and immersed in literature, but not teaching it. And when all of my fellow graduates and I were graduating, we all, you know, went to dinner and it was like, what are you going to do? And what are you going to do? And I just said, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know it's going to have something to do with writing, teaching, raising awareness about animal issues and helping people. And that's what I have done. I didn't know what it was going to look like. And that's okay. But I just kept asking the question, what am I good at? What's the need? And what do I love? And I kept trying a number of different things and listening to what I heard. Now, it wouldn't be effective for me to keep walking around the mall today, right? like that had its time, it had its place, but that's not the right thing to continue to do. Same thing with the cooking classes. At the time, it was a gap that needed to be filled. And yeah, I love the idea of still doing some cooking classes, but it has to be done in a way that's sustainable for me because they are so much work. And that's one of the reasons I've taken to doing some cooking videos and doing the cooking periscopes, etc. So being able to reach hundreds, thousands, or even millions of people by focusing on my books, the podcast here, the online 30-day vegan challenge and videos, that's what I chose to do. And that's where I'm at right now. That might change as well, right? It's not to say that the work I did before was invaluable, but it's for me, there were other things I felt were a better use of my time and energy. The things that I felt expressed my voice and made my voice heard by the largest number of people, that's where I'm at right now. You know, how can I express my voice in the most authentic way and get that voice heard by the largest number of people so that it's effective? And I'm sure you figured this out by now because the word advocate comes from the Latin word vocare, which means voice. To advocate means to use your voice. And that's what I do. And I'm really grateful I can use my voice for this cause. But we all have a voice to share. And it's because of listeners like you who said, yeah, I want you to keep using your voice. And I want you to keep doing it in this way. And I want to support you in what you're doing. It's because of you that have made this work possible and continues to make it possible. I could stop doing this and go teach cooking classes again and reach 30 people at a time. But I don't think that's the most effective. So as we come to the end of 2015, I really want to thank all of you who have supported me in doing this work, either with one-time donations or monthly contributions, and let you know that the changes I've made on my Patreon page, I think they're really exciting. I've added some new and exciting perks, and I've also created some goals so you can see exactly what your support would enable me to do. So if you go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau, you can see that the first goal is $5,000 a month, which I'm $1,700 away from. So that $5,000 a month would enable me to consistently create this content without stress, without strain. This content being the Daily Dose of Compassion emails that so many people are spreading around and loving, the podcast that I'm doing biweekly, the videos that I'm producing biweekly and could do more, the daily periscopes, the blog posts I write, every bit of what I do goes to this work to get my voice out there. Now, because I'm $1,700 less than that $5,000 a month, I just want you to know I have let go of my assistant and now I just rely on some sporadic help. So without my regular assistant, I just want you to know that I am not only writing, recording, and producing this podcast, I'm writing and getting up the blog post and organizing and updating the website. I'm the one, you know, of course, writing, but filming and editing my vegan POV videos, everything else. So I'm doing all of those things, which means I can't grow, which means I can't boost posts to reach more people, which means I don't have the time to do more than that because I'm editing videos, I'm creating the graphics for the podcast, and you know, whenever there's a graphic for the new vegan POV video, I'm managing all my social media, I'm putting up the Daily Dose of Compassion posts, which takes time to organize and schedule out on MailChimp, but also keep track of the ones that I've already posted, organizing that with Kim Roundtree, who is amazing and who is creating all of the gorgeous quote cards for that. Thank goodness for her help. But with $5,000 a month, I could do that with a little more help, which would enable me to reach more people and create more content. So if you understand it that way, maybe you'll see that with between 65,000 and 85,000 downloads a month, just for this podcast, if every listener contributed $10 a month, it would put me so beyond that $5,000 a month goal to the other goals that I have. And there are other goals after that 5,000 that would enable me to pay for some marketing, for some advertising, for PR, for social media help, so that I can do more. Because what I am doing right now is effective, but with your support, with reaching these goals, I could do more. So I thought you might be interested in seeing exactly how your support helps and what it means. And you can see exactly, when you quantify it that way, exactly how much I need. So go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau, check it out, become a monthly supporter. I think you'll like the perks. And I really appreciate that Patreon recently changed the amount that they show. So it's good that you can see exactly what comes to me, and you can see that when you contribute, you can see exactly what goes to me and where your money is going. So become a supporter, and please update your credit card if you are a supporter. If you're not getting charged, your money isn't going to me and it's not helping. So thank you so much. And figure out what moves you. Figure out what is a good use of your energy and your skills, and do it. Do what you're good at. Do what you love. If you love writing, and this is where Mark's book is going to come in so handy. If you love writing, write. Maybe it's a blog. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it's magazine articles. Maybe it's letters. Maybe it's writing bills, legislative bills, you know, and helping legislators do that. If you love talking to people, get talking. If you love talking and you love reaching out to the public, make videos, do public outreach, go speak at schools, talk to the person next to you. If you love cooking, cook, teach cooking, make a business from your cooking, make a viable hobby of your cooking. If that's what feeds you and you see the effect of it, do it. If you're an artist, create, draw, paint, sculpt. If you're a graphic artist, use your skills to advocate. Everyone has a contribution to make. Speaking of contributions, I want to talk about another aspect of advocacy that's related to this, and that's money. It's a huge part of this stage because so many people want to figure out how to do this work and actually make a living doing it. But people don't talk enough about money. We don't talk enough about money in our culture. I don't think it's unique to the vegan or animal protection movement or even other social justice movements. I think it's a cultural issue that we don't talk enough about money. And I think that leads to misconceptions and embarrassment and judgment about money. I touched on one aspect of it earlier, and that is that you don't have to work for a vegan or animal organization to contribute to either. You can support those you care about by contributing money, which so many of you, as again, I know so many of you do, not just to me, obviously, but to many different organizations and individuals. But I think we have a schizophrenic relationship with money, which is an understatement. The desire for money makes people do horrific things to themselves and to others, right? We can absolutely lose our minds over the desire for money. One of the reasons, besides just pure and simple greed, that we lose our minds over the desire for money is that we don't honor it for what it is. The way I see money is I see it as a physical form of energy. It's neither good nor bad. And there should be neither shame nor pride in having it or in not having it. When you don't have it, that's all you think about. When you have it, it can rule you rather than the other way around. When others have it, we're envious. When others don't have it, we think they should have it and we want to give it to them. So there's a lot to say about money and how it affects so many of our decisions and so much of our life. When it comes to advocacy, and again, I don't think this is specific to animal and vegan communities, but I think we have this notion that if you generate money from advocacy, your motives must be mercenary. They are suspicious. Or at least we think it should only be a certain amount that's appropriate for someone to make, even if they've dedicated their lives to this work. But beyond that arbitrary amount, and I say it's arbitrary because who decides how much is too much, then we start to question people's motives as if it's ours to judge. And I've seen people do that around salaries. People know that different organizations' executive directors make. I see it around salaries, not even just the executive directors, but that what the different organizations pay people. I don't think we should be proud of the fact that people don't like make a lot of money working for organizations, meaning that they should have a living wage. And there are a lot of organizations that don't pay people a living wage to work for what I think is the most important work in the world. But I think on the flip side, we recognize that if someone, including ourselves, had more money, we would be more effective. We would have more efficacy and reach. That's what, you know, like we recognize that. That's, I know why you support my work, right? Some people also see money as the form of energy that I mentioned before, which is a way to demonstrate value. And the giving of money is a way to say thank you. They recognize that when you put something out into the world, you get something back. And one of the things we get back is money. Money enables us to do the work we're supposed to do in this world without worrying about money. So if you do want to do this work full time, but you're in another job right now, first of all, I want to just mirror back what I hear people say a lot. I'm just going to put this out there. Sometimes I hear advocates say things like, I started doing these classes and I'm just charging a little bit because I don't want to make any money off of this. I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing this for the animals. No one will question your motives. If you want to get energy back for the work that you're doing, for the energy that you're putting out there, you get energy back. And one of the ways you get energy back is through money. People value what they pay for. And we need to value this work. Whenever I see people say that, it breaks my heart because no one's going to think that you get involved in animal advocacy because you're mercenary and you want to get rich off of it. First of all, I think we all should get rich off of working on behalf of compassion. Like, there is nothing shameful in that. Why should the organizations and the companies who are making money off of the backs of these animals, they're the ones who are the wealthiest in the world, and we're saying, no, we don't want to make money. No, we just want to like do this good work in the world. You know what? Okay, well, that's what we're manifesting. Because we're not the ones valued. We're not just we. The work is not valued in our society. But heck, you know, making money off of the backs of animals sure is. All the money's going there. And so as much as we keep playing small and saying, no, we don't want to, I'm not doing this for that. You can do it for the animals and still want to have to make a living or to get back the energy that you've put out there or to pay for the expenses that you've put out there. There is nothing shameful in that. And I want people to just sit with that. So if you're doing work that is a manifestation of what you believe and is valuable work in this world, people value what they pay for. Charge for it. If you're making jewelry, if you're making art, if you are teaching cooking classes, then that needs to be valued. And the only way it's going to be valued, and one of the ways it's valued in our society, is by people paying for it, right? Is by quantifying it somehow. And then people say, yeah, that is really valuable. I'm going to value that by giving you this money for it, right? That's how it works. There's nothing shameful in that. We need to let go of all the stuff we have around money and advocacy and this work. And I've talked about this when I've talked about organizations, you know, who come to me and say, we would love you to come speak, but we can't pay you. And I just think if we think society is going to value this work, they're not going to until we value this work. Everybody should be valued for the work that we're doing. That doesn't mean that there's not value in doing some things for free and volunteering. I absolutely do that. And, you know, when you're first building your business and your career and your organization, of course, I did a lot of things for free, especially in the beginning. I was happy to do that while I was building up my reputation. But I get it more than not from people and organizations who say, you know, and I see it all the time. If they really cared, they would be doing it for free. And yet it seems like we value, you know, I don't know, hairdressers like more than animal advocates. Okay. You know, because they provide a service and they provide a value. And we say, well, I'm going to pay you for it. Can you imagine going to them and saying, you know, if you really cared about the work you do, you'd do it for free. And so we undermine this work all the time. We do it to each other, we undermine each other, we undermine our work, our value, the value of this work. And I am just mirroring this back so that people can just dwell upon it and come to their own conclusions. And well, I'm going to draw a conclusion. We need to value this work. And the truth is, if you are working full time at another job that's not related to animal advocacy, and you want to do the work on behalf of animals full time, you know, so some people don't, some people do. That doesn't mean you quit the job that enables you to pay the rent or the mortgage or your bills. It means that you might have to work two jobs while you're building the business you want to create or whatever it is. Maybe it's just a part-time thing you want to do. That's fine. But as you're figuring it out while you have a job that enables you to pay your bills, you just keep asking the questions about what you're supposed to do. I kept asking, what do I love? What am I good at? And what's the need I can fill? And I kept getting direction about what I needed to do. And I worked for many years building what I have built today while I worked for other organizations. And when the time was right, I left. And now I've been able to do this work full time, which I feel so blessed to be able to do. But it didn't happen overnight. And I worked really hard, and I still work really hard to make it happen. It's not easy being an entrepreneur, doing work on your own. You know, being self-employed is challenging. It's not for everybody, because you're constantly, constantly aware that when you stop working, you stop earning, unlike when you work for an employer that pays you a salary. And that's why I say to you, your support is my employer. Like, you are paying and enabling me to do this work, because I don't have an employer paying my work. Now, if you don't want to work for yourself and you want to work for a nonprofit or a for-profit organization, animal-related, vegan-related, that's fine too. Not everyone is cut out to work for themselves. If you don't know whether or not you're that person, you'll find out pretty quickly while you're working for yourself. But look, I also know people who worked for themselves and they just got tired of it, and they were really happy to go back and work for someone else. So nothing is written in stone. You have the right to change your mind, but just be open to that. No one's going to judge you, except perhaps yourself. We judge ourselves so harshly. So as I said earlier, for those of you who don't do advocacy work full time, that's absolutely not necessary in order to help the cause. A lot of people come to me almost embarrassed that they work for corporations or companies or do work that's not animal related. Like they're apologizing for it, even though they like their job and they want to stay in it and they're not looking to work for an animal organization. But there's nothing to be ashamed of. If you're doing work in this world that you feel is a reflection of your skills and passion, there are other ways to be effective advocates in the framework of our current lives. You know, if you're an interior designer, you can influence your colleagues and company by talking to them about wool and cashmere and leather, or perhaps persuading your company to go green and not carry those things that wreak havoc on the environment, despite how much we romanticize these quote unquote natural products. That's advocacy. If you work for a corporation that brings in food for events or for the staff, you can influence the type of food that's served. That's advocacy. If you are a nurse or you work in a hospital, perhaps you can screen movies like Forks Over Knives, or get in touch with me, because there are things you can do to encourage them, to encourage the staff to take things like the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, and the staff gets points towards, you know, insurance or reduction or benefits that they get when they do things that demonstrate that they're doing something healthy for themselves. A lot of companies are doing these kinds of incentives for employees. So you can encourage them to take the 30-Day Vegan Challenge, right? So contact me about that. That's advocacy. There are so many ways to advocate, to use our voice. We don't have to quit our jobs in order to do so, especially when we work for someone else and are in companies where you work with people. That's your captive audience right there. That is such a great opportunity. If you have someone standing next to you, you have an opportunity for advocacy. If you have a voice to speak for compassion, to speak for the animals, you have the opportunity to advocate on their behalf. And of course, keep in mind that you can have more than one passion. You can be doing work in this world that has nothing to do with animal or vegan advocacy, and it brings you joy and it pays the bills. I don't believe that those of us doing this work as our vocation are necessarily the most effective ones. But if you want to advocate on a more full-time basis and aren't because of fear, then that's another story, and I would caution you against that. The fear is usually fear of not having enough money, the fear of not succeeding, the fear of succeeding, the fear of the unknown. So if that's you, I really encourage you to sit down with pen in hand, write out not only what your goals are, but what your vision is. How do you see yourself spending your day each day? What kind of contribution can you see yourself making? What blocks do you need to clear to make the first step possible? The second step, what are you afraid of? What are you excited about? Get that stuff on paper. The advocacy you decide to focus on will be as effective as you are excited about it. And whatever you choose, I encourage you to somehow incorporate hope into it. I often say that one of the reasons I've been doing this work for so long is because of the hope that I choose to focus on. Make sure there's an aspect of your advocacy that sees a little of the effect of your work. We all need to be fed. We all need to feel validated. And I don't think there's anything wrong with needing that. Even though I promise you that even though you don't see the effects of the seeds you're planting, they are there. I do promise you that. It's still okay to want to see the effect a little bit. So if you do direct animal rescue or fostering, it's so important to be able to see the animal you helped go to a loving home. If you do wildlife rescue, it's so important to see that the animal you helped heal and return to the wild. If you teach cooking classes, it's really helpful to know that your recipes and tips have helped someone make practical changes. If you're supporting others financially, it's important to know that your contributions are making a difference, whether you're contributing to nonprofit organizations, volunteer organizations, individuals, whatever. The reason you contribute to those you contribute to is because you know they have impact. The reason you do the work you do is because you know it has impact. And it's really important to be able to see that there is an impact. That's why I'm so grateful to you who believe in my work and see the power of it. You don't have to be a nonprofit organization to be effective. Some nonprofit organizations are incredibly ineffective. And some individuals make more changes than organizations who raise a lot of money but don't know how to allocate it, don't know how to actually implement that money or take that money and make it into effective campaigns or programs or projects. The primary difference between nonprofit and an individual doing this work is that a nonprofit doesn't have to pay taxes. It means they have tax-exempt status. And in order to keep that status, they have to adhere to some rules. It doesn't make you better or more effective or more organized. So whatever you choose, however you choose to advocate, however you choose to support those who are advocating, do whatever brings you joy. That's what will make you the most effective and the most happy. Being an advocate doesn't mean you're a martyr. It doesn't mean you have to suffer. It doesn't mean you have to be angry all the time. And that brings us to stage 10, integration and adaptation. So what do I mean by that? By integration and adaptation, I mean that being vegan just becomes part of your bones. What might feel like an effort when you first transition just becomes a natural, normal part of your life. Being vegan becomes effortless. You look at everything through the vegan lens and you know and appreciate, and you don't think twice about the fact that, yeah, when you travel to Germany, you might not eat the sausages gladly and happily, but that there is a higher cause, a higher principle that you're living by. You don't see it as a lack, but rather as an opportunity to reflect your deepest values in your daily choices. When you are in this stage, you know and appreciate and take pride in the fact that though it might mean having to look at the label on some shoes or coats, that you're taking the time to do so not out of dogma or rules or doctrine, but because you want all of your purchases to reflect compassion and nonviolence, even while knowing that you won't be perfect as a result. Integrating and adapting means knowing that though it might hurt a little more to be so awake to the mass violence perpetrated against human and non-human animals, that by being vegan, we're doing something to be part of the solution. We're doing something because it's the right thing to do. Integrating and adapting means considering it a victory rather than a loss. When we find one item out of 30 on a restaurant menu that's vegan, or when we realize that we can veganize 10 out of those 30 non-vegan items, even if they don't say vegan on them. Integrating and adapting means accepting the fact that though we might appear different to everyone around us, we're making a difference. And sometimes in order to make a difference, we may have to do something different. But different isn't inferior. Different isn't superior either. Stage 10 of what happens when you stop eating animals, integrating and adapting, means being flexible and creative, humble, truthful, playful, patient, unapologetic, emotional, and fiercely, unabashedly compassionate. It means you step fully into who you are and what you care about, attracting those around you with your dazzling light. That's stage 10. That's integration and adapting. Thank you for shining your dazzling light and for allowing me to bask in it as we transition from one calendar year to the next. May you continue to shine your light on the animals who live in the shadows, whose voices aren't heard, whose lives end without anyone to grieve them. May you shine your light on those whose compassion remains hidden even from themselves, and may it reflect back on you, the source and the recipient of hope and peace and compassion. For the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thank you for listening.